Prologue. Stories have to be told or they die, and when they die, we can't remember who we are or why we're here. Sue Monk Kidd, author. My father sits across from me at his big oak desk, wearing his blue business suit and his favorite brown belt cinched to the last notch around his slender frame. The briefcase before him is full, as always, of news articles and copies of the latest Oregon appeals and Supreme Court decisions. We are at his McAdam Avenue office, where he has been practicing law for over half of his 63-year legal career and is now the last surviving partner of his Portland law firm, Whipple Johansson McLean. From the case, he produces a certificate he has received in the mail from the Oregon Bar Association, congratulating him, Stuart M. Whipple, on his 50 years of service. Apparently, that's as high as they go, he says with a smile. His neatly combed hair is pure white now and corn silk thin, and he has to remind himself to stand up straighter sometimes, but you can still see the litigator in him. His soft-spoken ways are rarely ruffled, but the warrior is there, just beneath the calm surface, competitive, controlled, and very experienced. Now 91, his courtroom days are past, thanks to declining hearing, but he's still lawyering, though down to 30 hours a week, advising and solving problems for clients, many of whom he's had for a lifetime, and for the descendants of several he has now outlived. He remembers everything, every case, most of the names, the expert witnesses, the wins, the few losses. One stands out this afternoon, the Elizabeth Andor versus United Airlines case. He hasn't shredded the files from that trial yet. There's always something else to do. But he also has a hunch that someday folks might want to know about the case and the secrets it revealed. He points to it now as a possible pathway for a daughter's many overdue questions about his life's work and important moments. As I soon discover, the archive holds a still resonating tale of victory and injustice that's always been there for the asking, the records of a poorly understood, life and industry-changing airline disaster and lawsuit that for years have been stacked and curtained on steel shelves near his desk. Inside 8 cardboard banker's boxes, neatly labeled by his long-since-retired secretary, is the only collection that may yet exist of depositions, trial exhibits, transcripts, videotapes, engineering and maintenance reports, company documents, and photos from the groundbreaking case against a corporate giant. It's a trove of material that holds long-hidden truths about a famous plane crash and sheds a rare light on our civil justice system both then and now. And there's also a strangely evocative child's dark blue Oxford shoe, scuffed with wear and screwed to a pair of stout metal braces attached to a wide saddle leather band that buckles just below the knee as if from the polio era. The shoe contraption, still marked with a little yellow evidence sticker, is heavy in my hands, and I imagine the child forced to wear it, coming in from outside and hurriedly pulling it off, anxious to be rid of the awful thing. Even though decades have passed since United Flight 173 ran out of fuel and crash-landed in a Portland neighborhood, the accident holds important lessons for us now. That's why my father still clips and saves any article he finds that concerns safety, training, and accountability in the airline industry, and the protection of the constitutional rights of the individual in the courts. His vigilance is born of experience and alarm, since many of today's stories reflect aviation maintenance and operational factors similar to those that led to the needless loss of a passenger jet on a chill winter night in 1978. Other stories echo the issues of civil justice he fought for in the dramatic legal battle that followed, a battle that anyone who has been injured by a corporation's unsafe product or practice still faces, but now against even higher odds, thanks to pro-business legislation, court secrecy, forced arbitration agreements, and other recent initiatives that favor corporations over the individual. And it's also because of the little girl, Elizabeth, Lisa, who was just 3 years old when she was pulled, barely breathing, from the wreckage. She captured his heart when he met her for the first time in the hospital, her body encased in a plaster cast, her light brown hair hidden under bandages. "It was a sad thing," he recalls, and I can see him mentally replay the images. "She had a little stuffed animal, and when she saw me, she raised it up and said, 'He's going to get you.'" Dad smiles at the memory of her spirit, and as if to say her story should not be forgotten. His old office chair gives out a very familiar squeak as he leans forward and pushes a stack of files across his cluttered desk toward me. Among them is the thick 1981 deposition of the disgraced pilot, Captain Malbern Adair McBroom, as well as the cockpit voice recorder transcript of his doomed aircraft, and three DC-8 service bulletins from McDonnell Douglas sent out to its airline industry customers over the course of 10 years before the crash, warning of a mechanical problem that needed to be fixed. "Read these," he says. "It's a good place to start." The Oregonian, Friday, December 29, 1978. United DC-8 crashes at East Burnside, 157th, 10 killed, 175 survive. At midnight, reporters were still frantically nailing down facts about the dead and survivors of a devastating air crash in a Portland suburb when the Sunrise edition of the Oregonian had to go to press for morning delivery. It had been a chaotic scene around the carcass of the big jet, tucked among splintered trees and nearby homes, as stunned passengers, rescue workers, the media, neighbors, and curious bystanders tried to comprehend what had just happened. 6 hours earlier,